Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to the Jewel Network. The Jewel Network is a radio frequency of continuous streaming knowledge and wisdom, which promotes and sustains the activation of the present evolutionary process of immortality and the unfolding of the God Self within the evolving planetary society presently on planet Earth. The Jewel Network is committed to teaching the sciences of life and the science of living. By cultivating the mind of a scientist, you will be able to extract the very best the current century has to offer. You are listening to the Dr. Jewel Show with your host, microbiologist, preventative medicine and hygiene physician, Dr. Jewel Pilgrim, MD. Join Dr. Jewel here each Wednesday at 7 p.m. on the Jewel Network, hosted by thejewelnetwork.net.
Welcome, everyone. How are you? And here we are again another week on the Jewel Network, devoted to bringing to you the science of life and living. And this is the Dr. Jewel Show, and I'm your host, Dr. Jewel. And thank you so much for joining us because, as you know, we are running a very special series for you, The Science of Greatness. And we've had wonderful guests so far. As you remember, we had How to Live Your Dreams with Dr. Dorothy, and now to ensure that you really can do that, we have to look at some necessary steps we have to take. And one of those steps is really looking at our fear. We all have them or had them, and this is something that's not really addressed. We usually deal with the fact of what they've created, our inappropriate decisions, inappropriate actions, no actions at all, but it's not a conversation that we in general are willing to encroach upon to really face the subject. We've had some wonderful, well-known people who really talk about this, such as Tony Robbins, et cetera, but we have a wonderful guest who has done some incredible work himself to give us the ins on how to handle this. So we have Mr. Michael Luckman with us, who's an incredible being, and I want to tell you a little bit about him. But first of all, I want you to understand how critical it is that we have to really look at how fear is a real reality in most of our lives. I've had some data contributed to me, and I just want to read this to you. 2,740,000 people worldwide searched the word of fear this last year. That's 33 million individuals. 13,600,000 people Googled the word joy, and 5 million searched for the meaning of happiness. That is over 216 million people who this year were seeking to understand joy and happiness. Obviously, it's missing in their lives. We had 6,120,000 people ask the search engine about what is success, and 2,240,000 people wanted to free themselves from the debilitating emotion of shame, which, along with humiliation and embarrassment, all have their roots in fear. So with those kind of statistics, this is a real issue that people in their quiet time and private time are trying to get answers to. Now, we have a wonderful addition to our Science of Greatness series who's with us today, Mr. Michael Luckman, and he has created a fabulous book entitled Overpowering Fear and Defeating It, Overpowering Fear. So let me just tell you a little bit about him. This is a very, very incredible person. Great people are very incredible. 40 years as a salesperson, a marketing pioneer, an entrepreneur, and sales trainer, Michael Luckman is today a successful and dynamic speaker, trainer, and coach. his book that he has written that is wonderful. You're going to love this. Is a real sharing of Michael's journey through a career filled with amazing achievements. Now, these are some of the things he did. Launching of the first electronic toy and inventions like the cartridge video game system, the electronic keyboard, and the see-through advertising products seen on vehicle wraps. Michael also deals with the real issues that he had to face to overcome his fears, his uncertainties, and his doubts. And he is a very successful and one of the brightest minds in the business world, but he also had these issues. So Michael came to the conclusion that those who reach the top in sales are those who have learned to overpower their fears and to do whatever is necessary to gain the business, while those considered average salespeople succumb to their fears and would only do the things that fell within their comfort zone. So unlike psychologists and other scientists who approach the topic of fear from a very distant arm's length perspective, Michael has peeled back the cover on his own life and with astonishing honesty and impressive insights has brought that to the forefront in his book, Overpowering Fear, and is here today to give us in person through his own mouth how we can accelerate our sense of greatness by looking at and handling fear. So without further ado, I want to welcome you, Michael, to the show, and thank you so much for being here.
Well, Dr. Jewel, it's an absolute pleasure to be with you today and your listeners.
Well, you know, let's get right to work because I really want – you have so much talk about and offer, and obviously the book is going to really give us the real deal. But, you know, we're so always so curious, and we really want to know how you got into facing and dealing fear. So overpowering fear, the number one challenge in sales and in our life, your book, this is a fabulous, courageous book. You have very intense moments that you share with us. You've had some wonderful experiences and others that are just devastating. So what's the most profound lesson you've learned about overpowering fear and enjoying your success?
Well, excellent question, Dr. Jewel. You know, fear is something that we all feel. It's with us from the time we're infants. And probably the most profound thing that I learned about fear is because I was a fear-based person. There was not a day in my life that I didn't feel and experience fear. And so I didn't realize it at the time, but I was learning, even as a child, on how to overpower fears. Now, you notice I use the word overpower as opposed to overcome, because overcome has the meaning that, well, hey, fear's gone. You know, got no more fear. This is great.
Right.
But the thing is, we don't have to get rid of the fear. We just have to understand where it comes from and the fact that it most likely comes from our own delusional thoughts in our mind, because it's our mind that's creating the fear. And so if we know that it's a delusional thought, what we have to do is we just have to learn to change our minds about the thoughts that we're keeping in our mind and face the fear. And once we face the fear, we realize that fear is nothing more than a dark, like a rain cloud. You know, it's menacing and it's scary, and especially if it has lightning shooting it through it. But it's nothing but air. And that's what fear is. Fear stops us in our tracks, and all too often we succumb to it, we give in to it, we negotiate it. And what I found is probably the two most profound things that I found about fear is, one, that we all feel it. And by that I mean most times we think of ourselves as we're the only one experiencing this uncomfortableness. Nobody else, everybody out there, they've got a handle on it. They're good at that. They're not showing any fear. But me, I'm like a bowl of Jell-O inside. And this is especially true for high school kids. I've got a grandson starting high school. He's 14. He's graduating from eighth grade next week. And in the fall, he'll be in high school. And I know that he has these fears. And high school is probably one of those times that we face more fears. So the first thing, the profound influence that I think fear has, or that I found out about fear, is that everybody has it, and all of us experience the same fears.
Well, let me ask you a question, because now you made a statement that really caught my ear. You said that it was a delusion. And I was like, okay, now he says that fear is a delusion, and everybody feels this. And that's why most people believe it's real, because the sensation in the body is so intense. So if it is a delusion, then what is the fact about ourselves that we can always then have this, as you call it, rain cloud come over us, and that we can blow it away and stand on some fact? What is the fact that we have to know about ourselves to decide that it's delusional?
Well, probably one of the first things that we have to understand about ourselves is that the average person, scientists will say that the average person experiences about 60,000 separate thoughts in a day. Now, obviously, we cannot monitor all those thoughts. The other thing is that out of those 60,000 thoughts, better than 90% of them are negative. So you're looking at 54,000 negative thoughts that we think in a day. Now, not all those thoughts are going to react in a fear. I mean, because we would be in a constant state of fear. But with all these negative thoughts going through our mind, see, one of the things that, you know, that I teach when I'm working in my seminars and working with individuals who face fear is the fact that before you can even find ways to overpower the fear, you have to identify the fear.
Okay.
And with so many thoughts going through your mind, it's very, very hard to identify individual fears. But there is an excellent way that God created for us to recognize fear. When we have fearful thoughts, we feel the thought. We feel it in our body. Because the interesting thing is, as we know, that fear was wonderful. You know, you and I wouldn't even be talking today if our ancestors did not experience fear. Because fear is connected to our five senses. And it kept our ancestors alive. When they saw a wild beast, or heard a beast, or smelled a beast coming, or heard a neighboring tribe that was coming to wipe out their village, all of our senses are aware, and they send signals to the brain, and they send it to the oldest part of our brain, which some will refer to as the reptilian brain, the small part of our brain that sits above our brainstem. And what happens is if we were walking down the street, we saw somebody, and they're walking towards us, and it's a dark street, and in the glint of we see what they walk under a street light, we see that they're holding a knife in their hand. We're going to feel fear. And that's perfect. I mean, we should feel fear. But what happens at that point is that the amygdala, the senses sense that there's something fearful coming up, and the amygdala went into action. And it flooded the body with hormones, the first, the strongest being, of course, adrenaline. And what happens is in our body is that our heart rate picks up because it needs to pump more blood to our limbs, to our muscles. Right. Our breathing increases because we need to take in more oxygen to mix with the sugars in our blood to create energy. The other thing that happens to us when we feel fear, we feel that empty feeling. And that empty feeling is caused because the brain has told the digestive tract, we're going to put you on hold for right now. We're going to take your blood, and we're going to send it to the muscles and the legs and the arms and to the body, because we are now going into the fight or flight syndrome. This is what protected our ancestors. It kept them alive because they were either going to fight for their life or they were going to run. They were going to get out of there. But the interesting thing is the mind or the subconscious mind doesn't know the difference between what's real and what's not. And so when we have a fearful thought, let's say we were invited to a party, and the first thing we think about in our mind is, oh, God, I hate parties. I have to meet people, and I'm so uncomfortable meeting people. You know, I don't know what to say, and I'm afraid of, you know, flubbing my words or coming off like I'm an idiot or whatever it is. And what happens is we are experiencing the same physiological changes as if we walked out of our house in the morning and there was a mountain lion on our lawn.
We would
go into that fight or flight. But isn't it crazy that we're afraid of a mountain lion, and we're also afraid of going to a party and meeting people?
And
it's crazy.
Exactly. And I want you to hold it right there because we have a word from our sponsor. But I want you to definitely bring us to the point where what happened hundreds of thousands of years ago with our ancestors, why is it hanging around now as fear, and how do we handle it now, and that you're telling us that it's something that we've got to really overpower. We'll
right.
be right
okay.
this message. We'll be right back after this message.
Would you like to be smarter, more at peace in your life, less stressed? Are you searching for a greater spiritual connection? If so, what you need is access to the 90% of your brain that most of us don't even use. All of this and much more can be yours by enrolling in Dr. Jewel's Balancing Program. Dr. Jewel's Balancing Program is a revolutionary program utilizing sacred geometry to connect the logical left and creative right sides of the brain to work with what we call whole brain functionality. Many participants feel effects from day one, and in no time you can enjoy the physiological effects equal to 8 hours of meditation in as little as 15 minutes a day. Act now to start on this life-changing program and become the person you've always wanted to be. To learn more and sign up for Dr. Jewel's Balancing Program, please visit our website, www.thejewelnetwork.net. What are you waiting for? Make the move now.
Well, welcome, everyone. If you're just tuning in, you're just in time. We have a wonderful guest here today as part of our Science of Greatness series, Mr. Michael Luffman, and he has written a very, very incredible book, Overpowering Fear, and he's here today in person giving us full instruction on how he's done this and his recommendations on how we can do likewise. Now, we just left him just a moment ago, and he was telling us how fear had its place, that it was important and necessary, especially hundreds of thousands of years ago, and because it was a important tool for us to protect ourselves so that we could hold on to our bodies and continue to evolve, here we are today. So we say thank you to the fears of the past, but now, Michael, how do we now translate the party that we have ambivalences about going to because we feel insecure and inadequate about being able to navigate that event to be equivalent to the mammoth or the saber-toothed tiger that would have attacked us, you know, 150,000 years ago? How did we scrutinize and overlay a party as still being this type of threat? Tell us, how did that happen?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. It's somewhat confusing, actually, to think that our body would respond over, you know, the millions of years that it took as we evolved from coming out of that primordial soup and coming up on land. But, I mean, God created us with this ability to feel fear to protect us. But the question is, why do we feel fear when our life is not threatened? It's
right.
just going to a party or for a salesperson picking up the phone. So another important thing that we have to understand is that the fears we had as children are often the same fears we have today.
Okay.
We have tons of fears, and basically, a lot of our fear comes from the way we view ourselves and the things that we believe about ourselves.
Okay.
And here, this goes back to when you were 2 feet tall and you looked up at these huge people, your parents, your siblings, your grandparents. And when we were very young, they told us things about ourselves. They might have told us that we weren't too smart. In fact, I was holding a seminar on Monday evening, and we were talking about that because I grew up, and I used to hear when I did something wrong that my parents were wonderful people. I mean, I grew up in a dysfunctional family, okay? Everybody grows up in a dysfunctional family. It's just a level of dysfunctionality. But my parents argue they never heard this.
Right, Michael, but define that for us. What do you define as dysfunctional?
Well, dysfunctional is we're safe and secure. We've got a roof over our head. We're fed. But we're also defined. Like when I would do something wrong or make a mistake when I was a young child, I would hear, you know, Michael, when God was passing out brains, you must have been in the back of the line or in the other room. And I've had,
wow.
It's a funny thing, is I've had many a student and many a seminar attended, you know, raise their hand and say, I heard the same thing. But, you know, you can say, well, you can brush it off, or you can internalize it and believe that you're not that smart. Do you know, until I was in my 40s, and I'm in my 60s now, but
okay.
Until I was in my 40s, I never believed I was that smart. Now,
wow.
Now how does that, now you think about that. I mean, I was an average student. Every parent-teacher night, my folks would come home and say that the teacher said, Michael is not working, you're not working up to your potential. Well, you could have fooled me. See, I didn't think I had much potential.
Exactly. Okay.
And I thought I was doing everything I could. And when you're not, when you feel that you're not as smart as others, you look around your classroom when you're young and you think everybody is smarter than you, and this fear, and it generates fear, because what happens is you're afraid to get up to the front of the room, you're afraid to, you know, speak, you're afraid to take chances, you're afraid to do things because you're afraid that somebody's going to find out you're not too smart. And now this leads all the way up to you're an adult. You're in business. You belong to the Chamber of Commerce. You go to networking events. You have to meet people. And a lot of people are afraid of these events. They're afraid to go up to somebody. They're afraid of saying the wrong thing, saying something stupid, flubbing their words, you know, or being asked a question that they can't answer. And this is an illusion. This is not true. It was in later life that I learned, you know, that I really was smart, that I really was, that I had an above average IQ, that I could, that I read papers, I listen to the news, I'm a good conversationalist. But even with all these things that people would say, oh, come on, Michael, you're so smart. I mean, we see what you do, but my fear was always being found out that I wasn't smart.
Right. So you think so, in this case, so there's a form of dysfunction that is very common, but people still are really not clear to identify it, and that is where a individual or a child does not receive emotional or mental or spiritual support, even though they may have a place to stay, food to eat, et cetera. Not receiving mental and emotional and spiritual support is a dysfunctional environment.
Absolutely. We live, you know, I mean, your parents, I'm not talking about sexual abuse. I'm not even talking about physical abuse. It's
right.
Just the things people tell us. You know, they define us. You know, Shad Helmstetter, in his wonderful book, What to Say When You Talk to Yourself, said that by the time the average person is 18 years old, they heard the word no 148,000 times. I mean, when you think about that, that is an incredible number. And you know, it's I often like to tell the story of the infant or the toddler, you know, learning to crawl, and everybody thinks you're so cute and everybody loves you, and they're making you laugh and they're hugging you and kissing you. And then you begin to pull yourself up, and now you're crawling in the living room, and you pull yourself up on the cocktail table there, and you're standing on those wobbly legs. But incredible vistas just opened up for you. You see the magazine. You see, you know, when I was, you know, a child, I saw the ashtray covered, you know, with cigarette butts or the glass of liquid. And we start reaching for these things, and all of a sudden, we hear the word no.
Exactly.
Now, we've never heard the word no before, and it's our first introduction to it, but no doesn't sound like, oh, you're so cute and I love you. No is sharper. It's you know, and often with a raised voice. And now we're experiencing the where we are now being judged. And now it becomes good little boy, you know, bad little girl, you know, good girl, you know, good student, bad student, good athlete, you know. Plays well with others, doesn't play well with others. All of a sudden, people are judging us.
Okay.
And with these verbal and nonverbal admonitions that we get as a young child, we are defining who we are. We're accepting others' beliefs about us, and we don't even have the ability to really study its validity or argue its validity. And so,
Michael,
people tell us these things, and we accept them as the truth.
So rejection, then, is the modern-day saber-toothed tiger. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, and it doesn't have to be from parents, you know, who are, you know, totally dysfunctional and hate their children and say, call them a dummy or stupid. It could be a very loving mother who sees their child struggling with something and immediately rushes over to them and interjects and says, oh, honey, I see you're having a problem with this. Let mommy help you with this. This is difficult. And that child grows up believing that they can't do certain things, that
okay,
because their mother proved to them they can't do it. And you hear people, you know, use these terms. I wrote a blog, I think came out yesterday, about you know, what we hear and as children, and we accept what they're saying about us as the truth, when in that reality they're lies, they're not true.
Right.
And so as an adult, we all talk to ourselves, we all hear a voice, and oftentimes the voices we hear, the sound is our voice, but the words that our voice is saying to us are those lies we learned as children. And we even verbalize them ourselves. How many times do you run across somebody and you might say, hey, I want to buy you this. It takes a little assembly. Oh, I'm horrible when it comes to putting things together. Or here's a beautiful plant that you can plant in the backyard. Oh, you know, when it comes to that, all my plants die.
Right.
Well, when you put out to the universe all of these negatives about yourself, what's going to happen is it's going to attract other negative thoughts that are just going to come, and sort of like a self-fulfilling prophecy where it's going to validate that you can't do something, or you're not smart, or you're not creative, or you can't do something. And those things limit us because, see, when we're told we can't do something and then somebody offers us an opportunity to do something like that, they might say, you know, Dr. Jewel, you would be perfect in this area. And they're judging you. Well, maybe they're not judging you. They're evaluating you based on the person you are now, what they see in you. But your mind tells you, oh, I can't do that. I'll fail miserably. These are the fears we face every single day.
Right. So this is a misuse of the law of attraction. That's what you're telling us.
Well, yeah. I mean, with the law of attraction, I don't even know if it's a misuse, because the law of attraction says that we attract everything into our life, all the good and all the bad.
Yeah.
So
Okay. You
can say, yeah, we are misusing it because we're attracting negative. Negative attracts more negative.
Right. Well, Michael, now you made a statement and said that for 40 years and plus, you walked around and thought that you weren't a very smart person. So what was your aha moment that you finally figured out that that was just really just outrageous? And what happened that made you just really abandon that kind of thinking after sustaining that for 40 years?
Well, that is a very, very good question. And the answer is I became a spiritual person.
Oh.
And, I mean, it was my introduction to spirituality that I changed. And it was about, I would say, 25 years ago. What happened was, is I was married to my second wife, and we live in the San Francisco Bay Area. I'm sorry.
One moment. Here we go again. We got an announcement to make because we want to hear the whole story uninterrupted. So we'll let our sponsor speak, and then let's hear the story about what happened in the Bay. We'll be right back after this announcement. Stay tuned, everyone.
From Jewel Publications, Straight from the Heart by Dr. Jewel Pookrum, an incredible volume of work. Dr. Jewel explores the genesis of disease, prostate health, and sexuality, as well as sharing a new look at the effects emotions play in the resolution of cancer. Straight from the Heart is an outpouring of wisdom that you will read over again. Get your paperback or ebook copy today.
You're listening to The Jewel Network, justifiably enchanted with enlightened living, on the web at www.thejewelnetwork.net.
Well, greetings, everyone. If you're just tuning in, please don't leave your telephone or your computer, etc., because this is part of the highlight of the show. We've had with us Mr. Michael Luckman. What a wonderful last name. He truly is a very lucky man. And he has learned how to overpower fear. And he is our second guest on our Science of Greatness series, and he is imparting incredible information to us. Now, we left you, Michael, and you were telling us how after 40 years of believing that you weren't this incredibly brilliant person, what was the moment, the aha moment, that finally made you recognize that you were brilliant? And you went on to tell us that you became spiritual. Well, please tell us more about that.
Well, it wasn't just the belief that I wasn't smart. It was the belief that I didn't have any talent, that I wasn't talented, that I wasn't creative. I mean, even when I created things, I didn't allow myself to actually experience the thrill of saying, I created this, because I would look at it and I would say, well, anybody could have created this. See, that was my belief, that it wasn't necessarily me. And about 25 years ago, as I was mentioning, I was married to my second wife at the time and read in the local newspaper that there was a men's group there. And I thought, wow, that would probably be fun to join other men, you know, and just discuss, you know, men's issues. So I called up the guy who was running it, and we met for lunch and had a good, enjoyable lunch. And then I came to a couple meetings, and the meetings were like once a month, and it was just a loose-knit group of guys. There might have been 40 or 50 of us. And one day, somebody mentioned and suggested, why don't we read the John Bradshaw book, which was very popular at the time, having to do with the inner child. And there was a PBS special on that, and we said, geez, that sounds good. And so it came 10 of us did that, and we all bought the book, and we met. And now we were going to meet on a weekly basis because we didn't want that gap in between. And so we would meet on a weekly basis, but after a couple of weeks, we realized that we couldn't do it ourselves. So we looked for a facilitator and hired a facilitator. And what happened in this men's group is we bonded, and we became very, very good friends, all of us. We would do social things together with wives or girlfriends or just by ourselves. And the things that I learned out of this group was, no matter your ethnicity, no matter, you know, where you grew up in the country, what your religion was, it didn't matter. We were all the same. And that was probably one of the most exciting things to learn, that because we grow up believing, oh, don't talk to those people. 200 years ago, they attacked our village, you know, or something like that. Or these people are like this. And we learn this over the kitchen table. But then when you actually sit down with people, you find out, you know, none of that stuff that happened years ago matters. What happens now is we found out that all our mothers were the same. We could have interchanged mothers. We all grew up the same way. We all thought, we all had these fears. And it was the most wonderful thing that I could do. And in doing that, I was learning more and more about myself and who I was. And that's when I started formulating the fact that I was living with all this fear. Then we would go through, and we stayed together probably about 8-9 years. And we would go out when we learned all we could from one facilitator. We would go out and interview others. We were interviewing psychologists, psychiatrists, you know, anybody that we felt could help us on our journey. And what we hired a gentleman by the name of Ernie Pesci, who's a psychiatrist up in Walnut Creek, California, and also owns a school to teach a psychologist. And Ernie was fabulous. But what Ernie had, Ernie was psychic. And Ernie was spiritual. And Ernie just opened up a whole new world to us, especially for me.
Now, what do you define as spiritual? Now, you got to tell us. What does that mean?
Okay. My spirituality is I'm Jewish. And I was raised Jewish, and at 13 I was bar mitzvah. But I never believed in organized religion. I sort of chafed at it. And any religion, I couldn't reconcile an angry God. And the word fear God, just, it was crazy. Why fear God? God loves you and created you and created you for greatness. So organized religion just turned me off. Spirituality is my belief in a higher power.
Okay.
I speak to God all the time. And I have read many, many books about it, and each one builds upon the other. And one of the greatest books that I got involved in reading was A Course in Miracles.
Okay.
And A Course in Miracles basically talks about we were made for love. Love is our natural state, and the opposite of love is fear.
Okay.
And so if we're not feeling love, we're feeling fear. I mean, even Abraham, Esther Hicks, talked about the fact that we really only have two emotions. We only have good feelings and bad feelings. We have gradations of it, and we can talk about, you know, this is a greater fear or this one's bigger and whatever. But it doesn't really matter. It's just, you know, how it affects you. But they are the same, either good feelings or bad feelings. And so my spirituality is just a very, very strong belief in God, and that God wants us to have everything. God created us for everything. And one of the greatest quotes out of A Course in Miracles that I use quite often is that it is not that we ask God for too much, but we ask God for too little. You know, if God dwells within us and us in God, does God deny himself anything? Does God say, this is my child, I don't want him to have this and I don't want him to have that? No. God wants us to have everything. So it was this path that I started walking on, and which I love, which guides me every day. I read from A Course in Miracles every day, and it's like almost an impossible book to read. It's difficult, but it is so, so good. And then there's so many other things that I've got out of it. You know, there's one chapter, and I put a chapter in my book, and it's entitled Littleness Versus Magnitude. And this comes out of A Course in Miracle, that we were created for magnitude. And a lot of people don't understand the word magnitude, so in my book I changed it to greatness.
Oh, great.
Because,
Exactly.
We have been created for greatness.
Greatness, yes.
And so on the one hand, we have greatness. On the other hand, we have littleness.
Okay.
Most of us choose littleness.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because nobody told us that we can have greatness. We
well,
can have whatever we want.
Exactly. Well, you know, people are chafing at the bit here to talk to you on the phone.
Okay.
But, and I want them to if you want to talk to them. But I just want you to just tell me a little bit about those wonderful laws of yours. So we have more laws. I love them. Luckman's laws. Okay. And
Luckman's
that,
laws. Yeah.
They're fabulous in this book and that you have, okay? And, you know, of course, you know, A Course in Miracles, et cetera. But, again, Overpowering Fear by Michael Luckman, important book. We definitely at the Jewel Network are recommending this. And he has some wonderful laws here, Luckman's Law. So listen to this. I just want to state a few. You can comment on those. And then
sure. Go right ahead. Go right ahead.
Don't be afraid to ask for whatever you want. You just share this with us. You just might get it. And I think that you get it all the time when you always ask in sincerity.
Mm-hmm.
You are rarer than rare. Of all the people who have ever lived on Earth, there has never been anyone like you. And I agree to that. I've always thought that, you know, we were like a brilliant diamond that has, you know, more than 360 facets on it. And everybody
mm-hmm.
has their own facet, literally, to reflect the divinity from which they have been created. So
exactly.
Yeah, it's very different. So I was like, I'm loving this. And then this one is interesting. Learn to bond and build rapport with other people. This skill will change your life. And I'm like,
absolutely,
okay.
Absolutely.
Now,
if the average person can learn to bond and build rapport with other people, their life will, the opportunities that will come to them, their life will be so incredibly changed. And the best book on that would be going back to Dale Carnegie. He wrote it in 1937, How to Win Friends and Influence People. And it's just getting people, the best way to bond with people is to get people talking about their favorite subject. And their favorite subject is always themselves. And, you know, I teach networking for people for business networking, and because everybody's so scared to do that. And that's the way you have to meet people so that they can introduce you to your ideal prospects. And the thing is, it's going up to somebody, introducing yourself, and asking them about them. And believe me, people will start talking to you about it. It's not rocket science.
Oh, no. Well, you know, that is such an important key. But, you know, I do want you to meet your public. And so we've got just one more announcement here, and then we're going to go right to the phones as soon as we come back for you, Michael, okay?
Well, sounds good.
Okay. We'll be right back after this message.
The rapidly evolving face of the 21st century is requiring us to upgrade our physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual bodies in order to keep pace with the energetic changes around us. DiamondLightWorld.com provides you with a collection of energy tools and technology to assist you in regenerating your body, enabling your mind, as well as activating and strengthening your presence and purpose so that you can achieve greater manifestation of your divine goals in this lifetime. Julie Umpleby, a scientist and the founder of Diamond Light World, offers you specialized and personal Diamond Light Grid activations and alignments, focused meditations, home study programs for personal diamond matrix development, and much more. Visit www.diamondlightworld.com for further information on how you can step up to and into your highest potential.
Well, wonderful, and I'm glad that you're hanging right in there. Callers, we're coming to the phone right now, but I just want to tell you this has just been a fabulous show. So many pearls and diamonds have been dropped here on how to be a great being. And I think that's just wonderful. That was a wonderful, wonderful key, Michael, of the fact that establishing rapport with people is very easy when you can get them to talk about themselves. You're right. In, like Flint,
it's,
huh?
It's just overpowering your fear and going up and introducing yourself.
That's wonderful. Well, okay, let's go for it. Okay, if you want to speak to Michael, please call us. He's here for you, and call us on the line. We're coming right to you. Please call 347-215-9531. That's 347-215-9531. And caller, how are you? We're talking area code 618. Area code 618, you want to tell us where you're calling from, and Michael is available for questions or comments. Hello, 618. Okay. Engineer, do we have 618 still?
They are. Okay. We have them, but they're not responding, so we can move on. And.
Okay, yes, let's move on. Who's the next caller?
We're still looking for a couple more callers to call in. Friendly reminder, the number is 347-215-9531. But by all means, I'll go right ahead.
Well, Michael, how do you help other people overcome their fears? What do you do? If you were going to be our facilitator, what would you have us do? Something? Can you share?
Well,
with us, right?
You know, that's an important question, Dr. Jewell, because when I wrote the book, I didn't just want to give people and say, well, this was my life, and here's how to overpower fears, you know, say this, do that. And what I did is I created 10 exercises in the book.
Okay.
And the first exercise happens to be of defining your fears. And oftentimes, we don't even know what we fear because we're so used to, when feeling that fear, we've created a workaround. You know, like let's go back to a being invited to a party, and you're uncomfortable going to parties because you don't know anybody, and you're not sure that, you know, people would want to talk to you, and all of the fears we have. So you might come up with a workaround that you just don't go, or you go for a few minutes, you have one drink, and then tell the host that you got to run, you've got a prior appointment, and so you might not even realize that this has been your life pattern. So the first thing that people have to do, and it's not hard, but it takes some time, and they need to grab a legal pad, grab a cup of hot tea, let's say, and go into a room, close the door, away from the family, maybe put on some soft music, and just to ask their higher power, what do I fear? And if they just wait, what's going to happen is things are going to pop up in their mind. And these are their fears coming to them. And what I suggest is just write them down. Don't argue with them. Don't negotiate with them. Don't say, oh, you know, I hardly ever fear that. You know, because if it's coming to you, it's coming to you from the universe. It's being handed to you. Write it down. Once you get your fears down, then I usually suggest that you prioritize your fears.
Okay.
And prioritizing your fear is just a matter of which is the one do you want to work on first? Which do you think is causing you the most anguish? And once you've got that, what we're going to do is we're going to then move on to the second exercise where we're going to take the top three fears. And what I always like to do, see, people don't know that when they succumb to a fear, they've lost something. They've lost something substantial. You can almost quantify a fear. Let's say you're afraid, let's go back to the networking thing again because it's easy for people to understand and recognize. Let's say that you start a business, you bought a franchise. Well, you've got to join the Chamber of Commerce and the Rotary, and you've got to go to networking events to meet people who can refer customers to you.
Okay.
Okay? So, but let's say that there's a networking event this evening, and you decide not to go. Now, let's say that you would have met 12 people tonight. You would have given your card to 12 people. You would have gotten 12 people's cards. You would have then had conversations with 12 people. Okay. Out of those 12 people, let's say two of them could refer you to somebody. Am I right?
Yeah.
And let's say out of those two people, one person buys.
Okay.
So if you had gone to this networking meeting last night and you would have met these 12 people and two people referred somebody to you, one person you met with and they bought from you, and they bought $10,000 worth of merchandise from you. And this
mm-hmm.
is this is their first purchase. And in a year's time, they may buy two more times. So we're looking at a customer that's worth $30,000.
Okay.
Well, it would have taken you probably an hour and a half, 2 hours to go to that networking event, but you were afraid. And so bottom line is you missed out on $30,000 worth of business.
Exactly. Okay.
Every time we face a fear and we give in to it by not doing it or doing something less or doing something different, we can actually quantify what we lost out on.
Wow.
I mean, and it's just, and not only that, but through being involved in things, you meet people. You know, I've got a good friend that I had lunch with today. He's a professional photographer, a very good one. Did the photograph of me for my book and the
very
photographs
nice.
On the website. But I met him through the chamber.
Okay.
And we became friends. So when you turn your back on these things because of fear, you lose things. If there's, let's say you're an employee and there's a job posting at your company and you go over there and it's the perfect job for you. The description is like it was written for you. But you've heard rumors of the hiring manager who would be your boss, and you've heard rumors that this guy is tough. And so instead of thinking, my God, I've got to apply for this, you instead think, oh, God, I had bad bosses in the past, and I heard rumors that this guy is tough. Well, so what? You can handle that. And maybe the people that are complaining about this boss just never learn how to get along with them.
Exactly.
But you don't apply for the job because you're afraid that you may have a tough boss.
Mm-hmm.
And so what did you give up? Well, let's say this position would have paid $20,000 more in salary per year.
Okay.
Well, you lost that $20,000.
Yes.
What could you have done with the $20,000? What could you have bought? Could you use it towards a down payment for a house? Could you purchase your spouse the new car that they wanted? Could have bought orthodontics for your kids? So when they're adults, you could look at that perfect smile and say, I did that.
Okay.
So you have to look at what you lost, $20,000, what the $20,000 would have bought. But also there are intangibles too, Dr. Jewell, that you would lose. You would lose the prestige of that position. You would lose that position to learn and be a stepping stone for a higher position.
Right.
So by giving in to fear, you've lost a whole lot.
Okay. Alrighty. Well, that is incredible. So it is really true then, you're saying that whatever you fear, you should really then do it.
The thing is, it's not real. I mean,
okay.
I'm not talking to about going into the zoo and opening up a lion's cage and going in there because you want to face your fears, which would be crazy. But every day you are going to face some fears, and every day, and people have to remember, your listeners have to remember, that they're not alone. Everybody's feeling this, and nothing is going to happen to you. You know, by picking up the phone and calling somebody, by going someplace, by doing something, for applying that job, nobody is going to jump out at you and grab you by the throat and say, why did you do that? Why did you call me? It doesn't happen.
Right.
The fear is bigger than what any consequences.
Okay. Well, I think that is just that is amazing. That is just fabulous here. So I'm looking at our board over here. It's like you have spellbounded everybody, Michael. I mean, we have all these people here. They're sitting in the chat room, and they're sitting on the telephone, and they are quiet as a mouse. They are quiet as a mouse here. You know, you've caused them to really go in and really have to look at that aspect of themselves, as you say, that most people really never address. And I think that that is just a profound exercise, and I really emphasize that you take and perform this exercise as fast as possible. Your legal pad, your favorite journal, and just sit there with, quote, spirit, unquote, and ask the question, what am I really afraid of, and begin to write it down.
Right. And once you're aware of those things, when you feel that fear, then, of course, there's a number of things and a number of things you can say to spirit, to God, to Jesus, whoever you want, whoever you see as your higher power, whoever you see as your partner, you know, by asking them to take the negative thoughts from you. Let go of the negative thoughts. Let go of the fear.
I agree. Well, you know, last but not least, this is very important because I want everyone to purchase a set here. You've made some free audio programs on overpowering fear, as well as your book. How can people get a hold of these gifts? And thank you so much.
Okay.
Well,
they could go to my website right on every page of the website on the right-hand side, they can just register. What we look for is their first and last name and their email address. And what they'll get is a email in return with three free audio downloads. Now, these are not little skimpy ones. These are part of a set that by the early part of next year, I'll have about 14, 15 that I'll be selling in a set. But these are the first three that I think are very important. One is overpowering fear, one is shutting off shame, and the other is victory over victimhood.
Wonderful.
And those are free, and these are 45 minutes to an hour each.
Oh, these are
fabulous. And they're free to download and just, you know, put on their iPhone, their iPod, their MP3 player, whatever. The other thing is there's the daily blogs there. There's a lot of information, and it's really quite easy to get to my site. It's Michael-Luckman, and the dash is the hyphen mark, not the word dash, but the hyphen. And the last name is easy. It's L-U-C-K-M-A-N. So it's Michael-Luckman.com. Or if that's difficult, if they forget my name, they'll remember Overpowering Fear, so they can go to overpoweringfear.com, and it brings them to the same website.
Right.
I would love to hear from them, I love communication from the people who've read the book and the people who read my blogs. I get a lot of great responses, and I just love that, you know, because it makes me feel so good that I'm helping other people.
Well, no problem, Michael, and I want to thank you. You know, we're running out of time, and I want to thank you so much for coming and sharing with us. This is such a open, leisurely, and so informative interview. Thank you so much, and I encourage every one of you to make sure you listen to the archives and make sure you visit his website, overpoweringfear.com, and please purchase the book. I really like those Luckman laws. Thank you so much. And, of course, tune in tomorrow. That's Thursday for Consequences 2012 with Dr. Blair at 7:30. And don't forget Fridays, that's Music for the Mind of a Scientist with Maurice Thompson. And I'll be back next week. Bye-bye, everybody. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye, Dr. Jewel. Thank you.
Bye-bye, Michael. Love you.
Thank you.
Broadcast schedule,
additional information, and to purchase products, please visit our website at www.thejewelnetwork.net. If you'd like to reach us, please send an email to info@thejewelnetwork.net.